investigative journalist Molly Barrows. For years, I've covered the stories that made headlines in Northwest Florida and all along the Gulf Coast. Murders. Missing persons. And mysteries of all kinds. These cases are far from over for many victims, because the full story has yet to surface. Join me for Gulf Coast Confidential, where I dive into the saltier side of the South and expose the lies, greed, and corruption that often weighs down the truth. It's time to turn the tide and get a shot at justice. Hi, I'm Molly Barrows, and welcome to my investigative series, Gulf Coast Confidential, where we cover some of the most scandalous crimes and cases that bubble up in Northwest Florida and beyond. Joining me to talk about some of these what-the-feezy-type cases, of course, is Pam Hill, a pharmacist and advocate for victims, because she herself has experienced violent crime in her own family. Well, in this episode, Beauty Buyer Beware 2, we are continuing our coverage of Dr. Ben Brown, the Gulf Breeze plastic surgeon, who's 33-year-old wife Hillary Brown died in November after he performed several procedures on her in his office at his Gulf Breeze facility, Restore Plastic Surgery. So I've got a new article out in the Pensacola News Journal on PNJ.com, but it was on the front page. So this is just an example. And these are just two of the people that I interviewed for this article. And it's basically reaction from former patients as well as employees of Dr. Ben Brown's who talked about his work and talked about the type of care that they received when they went to him for work. And they're horror stories, oh, yes. Pam. I mean, it was more than a dozen people that actually came forward. I included several of those victims in this article and two former employees, but I have talked to other former employees. I have talked to other victims. And I have also talked to other patients who said that he was great. Mm-hmm. They had no complaints and that mm-hmm. they were better for it. But I know that there's a lot of interest, of course, in this case. So we just wanted to sit down, talk a little bit about some of this new information that came out, because it seems like every time you turn around, there's just something new to find out about this case, and none of it's good.
Right. It's salacious for a lot of people, I think, and they want to read it. But this article is called That Man Has to Be Stopped.
Yes.
And so
open it up while you're talking.
Right, that seems to be the consensus. Is we have people that contact you, and a few people contact me. It's touched almost everybody in our community here. Somebody knows somebody that had surgery there. And I mean, this is awful. His wife died in his office having elective surgery done, you know. And I think some people were thinking, well, that's his wife. I mean, you have to be careful. Anytime you're cut open or put to sleep or have surgery, we need to respect that. And I think someone needs to be there for the patient always. That's usually protocol for everybody else. Usually the doctor doesn't do the surgery and then drive you home, you know?
Right. Well, and those are some of the issues that are coming out as I dive into this. It's not just these horror stories that these people are sharing about the experiences they had, and we'll dive into that in just a second about, you know, what they said happened to them. But, you know, it's the state of Florida's response as well, the Florida Department of Health, any person in authority that's supposed to provide oversight or accountability to a doctor or any medical person who is providing care to, you know, swore on an oath to first do no harm. Mm-hmm. The state of Florida is like, I'm sorry, what? I can't hear you. What'd you say? You know, I mean, it's crickets, and it's very concerning. And I found another story over the holidays of another plastic surgeon from Florida who was a methamphetamine addict. And he did sloppy work on patients, and they suffered for it. And they all made complaints to FDOH, which is the acronym for Florida Department of Health, but they got no response. They got nowhere. And what I'm learning as I'm looking into this, and I will have more information on this too, is that the state of Florida just makes it super difficult for people to file complaints to be heard, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think that's part of the problem is what we're seeing with this. And because plastic surgery is elective, I think a lot of patients feel this sense of, well, I brought it on myself. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing mm-hmm. from some of the people that I talked to, both men and women
right.
who went to him.
Well, when people complain about something, people don't complain about, well, my skin darkened a little bit right there. We're talking about people that have wide open, gaping wounds, 4 inches by 9 inches, on their abdomen.
Yeah, so
you know that,
before we get into some of those details, let's go ahead and talk about that. So these people in the front here in this picture, this is Jane Hawkins, and that is her son, Charlie Condon. And Jane is
a fantastic, very intelligent, professional woman. She reached out to me when she realized that I was covering Ben Brown. And for those folks who aren't familiar, you can catch up on some of the nuts and bolts of what's going on with this case in our other episode on Gulf Coast Confidential called Beauty Buyer Beware. So that's why I've called this one Beauty Buyer Beware 2, because this is basically a follow-up on what is essentially a developing story. This story first broke in November with the death of Hillary Brown. The Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office is investigating her death because of those unusual circumstances. But in a nutshell, he was performing procedures on her, which he said through a PR firm that they were minor procedures. He wanted to be sure to point out that it was during office hours, which I thought was interesting because in the original article that I wrote, I said it was after hours because that's essentially no one else was in the office but him and just a couple of staff members. And their credentials are questionable at this point, what they were actually trained to do, what equipment was there to provide for her when she coded while she was having these minor procedures done. And then, and we'll get into some of those details in a second, but essentially an ambulance was eventually called. She was taken to the hospital, but she died a week later because her body went without oxygen too long and they had to remove her from life support and ended up donating her organs. So she went from being perfectly healthy and fine one day to being dead and donating her organs
at
the end of November. Right.
Vivacious, probably planning for Thanksgiving week. That was
and
right
Christmas
around the
coming up. Yeah. She was a mother, three young babies.
And all kind of stuff going on like that. And the fact that if it was in office hours or after office hours, who cares? But if it was during office hours, I have even more questions. If that's if that's your minimal standard right there, that makes me have more pause.
Right. And of all the accusations that we're about to get into, this is what you want to harp on? Oh my gosh, we were open. Yeah. Okay, well, did anybody else see you in there operating on your wife beside these other two people?
Well, and I mean, also,
who may or may not have been trained.
Right. Well, in an office, you have surgeon's assistants or physician's assistants with a surgeon, usually medical technologists, medical tech people, nurses. You have some people there. People are not crazy. They're not going to pay $4,000 for some little procedure and look around and go, well, I hope, you know, Cindy Lou comes in today to help him.
I know. And that part's kind of, there's a lot of questions that I have about his staff, who was trained, who wasn't, and we'll get into a little bit of that too. But just what's new now from the last time we talked about this case is these interviews that are now out in this latest article. Jane Hawkins, like I was mentioning, she actually came over from Destin. She had he came highly recommended by a friend, and she asked others about him. She is a very successful businesswoman, has owned multiple businesses, and that was what I thought was interesting. When I was talking to her in Pensacola when we were doing the interview about this, she said, you know, Molly, there's part of me that just wants to kick myself. She said, you know, I handle licenses on a regular basis for my business. I check out other people's licenses. I thought that I had done my research. There was nothing on his record. And she's right. When you do an online search on the Florida Department of Health's website, there's nothing that says that he's done anything wrong. And in the eyes of the state of Florida, perhaps he isn't. But in the eyes of this lady and in the eyes of her son and in the many, many patients and former employees that I've talked to, there is a lot that should have been looked into. And the state of Florida wasn't the only one that knew. He was also associated with a surgical group called North Florida Surgeons, and they certainly knew as well. I've seen copies of complaints that were sent to them talking about concerns about the way he ran his office, including from a former employee who said that basically she was responsible for keeping the equipment sterile and providing a sterile room when they did perform procedures because, as you know, it is elective, but it's still cutting people open, and they're going to be exposed to germs if it's not done right. They could potentially get infections. And these are some of the complaints that are coming forward. The people had numerous infections that were stubborn and wouldn't go away. Again, we'll explain a little bit more about that in a second. But in this particular case, I know that North Florida Surgeons and the state of Florida, the health department was made aware of the fact that this woman complained saying, hey, they don't have the proper sterilization equipment. They're telling me to clean bloody tools in a bucket of distilled water in their sterile processing room. She showed pictures, which are just essentially, it looks like a storage closet. And so anyway, there's just a lot that people who were in positions of authority to know and who could have potentially stepped in at any point over the past several years. And that's how far back I went with some of these patients. I didn't really talk to a lot of patients prior to the past several years. Some that had followed him from his office in Pensacola, some that didn't know him until he had moved out to Gulf Breeze essentially on his own. But there were plenty of people that were in positions of authority who knew what was going on and who were silent. So when I hear people criticizing, and in reaction to this article, there are some online comments, you know, basically saying, well, you know, why didn't these women come forward sooner? Or why didn't these patients come forward sooner? Why didn't these employees come forward sooner? Aren't they just as responsible? To me, that's somebody who's got an axe to grind, who's trying to protect Ben Brown. That's the way it comes across.
It does. But I mean, the whole silliness of it all, it's like, it's, he doesn't have any discipline on his record, but that doesn't mean that the complaints weren't sent in. They have an obligation to look into them, but people, just like anything else, they do it with whatever enthusiasm they garner or wish to show. You know, and they, oh, that's my friend down there, or I don't sound right, or whatever. When somebody, these people, I'm mad. I don't want people blaming the victim. I'm tired of that with everything.
I agree.
You know, what did it take? It took him operating on his wife and her dying for these people that have been screaming and yelling.
The walking
and
hurt, wounded. Right,
maimed and mangled and manhandled. You know, them. They aren't idiots. They are regular people that know what their body looks like. I don't understand a surgeon that can put out that kind of work and not look at it and go, oh, my God.
I know.
I don't understand that.
It's shocking and horrifying. And what Pam's talking about, you'll have to go check it out on PNJ.com. But also, we'll provide some pictures for this segment as well, because we have awesome editor James Roy, our director, who does a great job of helping us tell these stories visually. But, you know, Jane did provide some pictures for me of her wounds. And basically, she had a mini tummy tuck, and she'd had older implants, and her doctor recommended that she needed to have those removed simply because of their age. So she had been talking to Dr. Brown since about 2019, for a year or so, and then she finally decided to press forward and have the surgery. And the idea was to remove the old implants, have a mini mommy makeover, a tummy tuck, and take some of the fat from her belly and use it to rebuild her breasts. So this is what she had wanted. She wanted a certain size breast, but and there's just a lot of details that I didn't include in Jane's from Jane's interview in the article, and this is why I wanted to share some of them with you and our listeners for Gulf Coast Confidential. But Jane's story is essentially a nightmare, and so she went in for something that should have only taken, you know, a few weeks or a few months to really properly heal from. And instead, to this day, she's still dealing with pain. And pretty quickly after the surgery, there was immediately a problem. She realized that her butt was sore and that he had put in 5 pounds of fat into her butt that she had not asked for. And that was shocking and just kind of horrifying and unsettling to her. But, you know, you've just had these procedures. You're not feeling great. You know, she's got these sutures on her stomach. And so anyhow, the sutures started to open up within a couple of weeks. She keeps going back to him, and she obviously would do a much better job telling her story than I am, and so I won't go into every single detail. But in essence, there was never a straight answer. It never got better from her from that point on. From the moment that she got home, there were issues. It wasn't healing properly. The sutures were opening up. The medications that he had recommended in the post-op sheet, like he had put a certain list of meds that he'd wanted her to have, and when she looks to see what she'd actually been given, you know, from the doctor's office, what they had called in to prescribe were not what he had put on the post-op orders. And it turned out that that information came directly from Hillary Brown. And so she has lots of conversations where she talked about working with Hillary. Hillary was actually Ben Brown's office manager. And a number of the patients that I talked to said that they did work directly with Hillary. And while they liked her personally, several of them questioned her experience, and they were right to do so. She has an engineering degree from Ole Miss. She is not educated as a medical technician. And this is something else that I'll be looking into a little more deeply. But people need to know who she performed procedures on them. I mean, there's even pictures on their social media and their website of Hillary performing laser treatments on people. And I don't know that she necessarily was trained to do that. In fact, if you try to look up her what they call her medical license number, according to staff that I talked to, that number doesn't match anything that a normal person that she, a normal position that a person like her would have. It doesn't look anything like these numbers. So these are things that I'm still learning, and that's why it's kind of taking me a minute to describe it. But in essence, she didn't have a proper didn't have a proper license mm-hmm. number.
Yeah.
And if you were to look it up in the state registry, all you can find is that number that they gave her, that mm-hmm. apparently Dr. Ben Brown gave her, not the state of Florida. Yeah.
And not everybody uses good sense these days with everything, but when it is systemic and planned and you're paying people their little check to do all this stuff, it's not like it was a oops one time. I know of a doctor that he's having a midlife crisis, and he had a little sweet thing, a little girlfriend, you know, that was young, and he was a surgeon, and he wanted to just let her see what that was like. Well, he didn't kill anybody, but he could have, she could have. What in the world? And so he got sanctioned by the Department of Health, because I know that they do. Florida is a pretty good state on that. But why this case is what I'm asking about.
Yeah, and that's what I want to dive into. And I'm beginning to wonder, is it something to do with plastic surgeons yeah. in general?
Right.
Is it because it's elective? Is there just not that level yeah. of oversight? Is there not that level of mm-hmm. concern? I mean, I can't help but believe that's not necessarily mm-hmm. true. I mean, if you're concerned about one medical profession, yeah. you'd think you'd be concerned about others. But based on what I'm hearing, mm-hmm. I mean, it is complaint after complaint.
Right.
And in a nutshell, Jane Hawkins was, according to her son, was basically on death's door. And mm-hmm. she was not healing. She was not getting better. The wound on her stomach just kept getting wider and wider and wider. And she said at one point, they were difficult to get a hold of. That's some of the recurring themes that I've heard among all these patients are these sutures opening, wounds not healing, wounds opening, not, you know, coming together and the skin ripping mm-hmm. and infections. Mm-hmm. Necrosis is another common complaint. And that's where there's a lack of circulation to the skin and it turns black. Mm-hmm. I've seen breasts that turn black after he did work on them and literally fell apart. Talked to numerous women who said that they experienced that. Jane Hawkins also had to have necrosis on her stomach, dead skin on her stomach mm-hmm. removed because it just wasn't healing properly. And so she, you know, she's got issues with how they're dispensing medication. She's starting to question Hillary's experience. Mm-hmm. So she's having more and more concerns about the care that she's receiving from his staff and his office while experiencing this wound that won't heal. Mm-hmm. So she does everything that they tell her, though. Hey, here's your wound care treatments. She does it. It's not healing. She calls them. She has a difficult time hearing back. Like I said, a lot of other patients had the same thing. But then they put her in something, and I don't remember the name of it, but it's essentially a corset type contraption, and it's supposed to help kind of hold you together, mm-hmm. I guess, to give you time to heal. And she said when she first started having issues with that Ben came in, said, this is what you need to have. And then Hillary helped put it on her along with the other staff. And they said they basically had to wrestle her into this thing to the point where she couldn't get it off herself to even go to the bathroom.
Oh, my goodness.
And she said that it caused so much pain and she was in excruciating pain. And she said, this can't be right. And they kept telling her, no, it's normal. It's normal. And finally, she was just screaming in agony, and her husband and her son were trying to cut this thing off of her and couldn't.
Oh my goodness.
And so they ended up having to go into the office and they did finally remove it from her. And Ben Brown's reaction was essentially like, well, why did you have this thing on? She goes, because your wife put it on me.
Oh.
Because your staff put this on me. And I may have been wrong. Maybe he didn't recommend that she have it. But at any rate, I've got Jane's interview and I should go back over and look over those notes. But she was put into this corset type thing. It did actually exacerbate the problem, according to Jane. Whether that exacerbated it or not, the wound was not healing and it just continued to open. And she said he was promising her free revisions. He was promising her free other treatments, which is another recurring theme which I've heard from some of these other patients, that when there were problems and things did go wrong, that he would say, well, I'll fix it for free and I'll offer you X, Y, and Z for free, mm-hmm. you know, laser or whatever, whatever. And so Jane was like, I just, you know, you're in for a penny, in for a pound. All these women, men too, are paying cash. This is not something for the most part that insurance will cover unless, for example, you are a cancer patient and you're having, you know, breast reconstruction. And I did talk to a couple of those patients as well who had gone to him. And one woman who was a nurse of 35 years, Joy Edwards, she's also mentioned in my article, has a nightmare experience. Basically, she said, it started off with a nicked lung. She woke up with a tube in her chest because there was a nicked lung during the surgery. And she said that basically the boob job that she got went terribly wrong and her breasts rotted off.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, just went black, and she had terrible infections. And again, difficult time getting a hold of him. She said she was in the hospital at one point, going back and forth between, you know, the initial surgery, going home, seeing problems, coming back, them trying to fix it. And at one point, the nurse actually, she said there was a nurse in the room with her, and they both could see her breast turn black together. And the nurse called him and said, there's a problem with the blood flow. We believe the circulation's an issue. And he said, no, that's normal. It's fine. Send her on home.
That's what he seemed to say to everybody.
And that's what mm-hmm. I heard consistently. Yeah. Like every single one of these women that I've talked to, they would say, well, it must be something with you. Yeah. Your body's not healing properly. You're among the less than 10%. Mm-hmm. You're among the less than 1%. You're among the less than 2% that have these problems.
Well, you know what? It doesn't matter. It's not true. Because I'm having it. I don't care what percentage it is. You know?
Right.
So the thing is,
that's a mind F too.
Oh, definitely. And if you are dealing with any healthcare professional that will not answer your questions, my advice is just go somewhere else, because there's too many of them. That's not acceptable. It should be, even if they don't know, they should say, I do not know, but I will find out. You know, it's okay to say that. I mean, this people ask more questions about their car than their body, and it's okay, but he has programmed people to do that Darvo response, that anything leveled against him, deny, attack, and then keep on going to the other person, reverse it, and turn himself from the victim to the offender and vice versa. He becomes the victim and has them caretaking him and feeling shameful and guilt. You know, shame and guilt serve no purpose at all. You know, when we've done something that we need atonement for, we need to ask for forgiveness. But shame and guilt will have people with a gun to their head.
Absolutely. And that's so much of what I'm hearing from so many of these patients who struggled with problems after he did work with them. It was just this sense of, well, I chose to do this surgery. I put myself in this situation. My problems aren't as bad as what I'm hearing about other people having. Maybe my pain doesn't count as much.
It doesn't matter.
And it doesn't matter. And that's what hurt my heart so much. And then here's the other thing. He was also having them all sign all sorts of paperwork, including arbitration agreements, which is why so many of these women that did have problems and they're now talking to personal injury attorneys, a lot of them can't take their cases simply because they signed these arbitration agreements and didn't realize it. Guess who didn't? Jane Hawkins.
Yeah, good.
You know, so she has hired legal counsel. She is pursuing her options. And for her, it is not about the money because he kept the lowest amount for medical malpractice insurance. So there's not a lot to gain anyway, which is, I guess, smart business-wise. Yeah. And other people that I talked to said that money seemed to be the real motivator for a lot of the decisions that he was making.
But I mean, like, you're in plastic surgery, and this is a aesthetics thing. This is cosmetics. I've seen people that own nail salons that know to keep the image up and beautiful and feminine and clean and stuff. His place looked like where you sell collector cards and stuff. I mean, that's a hot mess out there.
There's a lot that I've heard also from people that are close to the family that essentially said that he was struggling financially, that when he did move out to Gulf Breeze, he'd had an office in downtown Pensacola, and he'd been there for several years and affiliated with a couple of different surgical groups over the years since he's been down here in the Florida Panhandle. He's originally from the Midwest. He went to school in Louisiana, Texas, and did his residency in the D.C. area. He claimed it was Georgetown University, by the way, y'all, and it was not. He did not do his residency at Georgetown University. He has on his LinkedIn page and also basically on his medical resume that he attended Georgetown University, or he would imply that he did, and say that his residency was there. Well, I reached out to Georgetown University, and they have no record of him being a student there. But what is also on his LinkedIn is that he also went to Georgetown University Hospital MedStar, Georgetown University Hospital there in D.C. Okay. So it is not part of the Georgetown University. He's not a student of Georgetown University just because he did his residency at a hospital with the name Georgetown University in it.
MedStar.
Exactly. It's MedStar. It's a program that is owned and operated by MedStar. He went through the MedStar residency program.
Mighty clever.
Yes. And so it's interesting. When I found that out, I started looking into his other credentials. So he also put down there that he was valedictorian the year that he graduated from the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School. And I'm looking at it right now on his LinkedIn page. And I reached out to UT Southwestern. And basically, they said, yes, he did go to the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School. He did graduate when he said that he did, But when it comes to whether or not he was valedictorian, we could not find any information in our files basically supporting that.
Wow. Well, they should be able to find you. You'd be like at that number one spot.
Yes, you would think. Yeah. And so I actually found the valedictorian that year.
Awesome.
I reached out to him and I said, just to make sure I'm clear, because I had not heard back from UT Southwestern yet. And I said, just to make sure I'm clear, were there multiple valedictorians this year? Is that a thing? Like, I don't know. I was not valedictorian, clearly,
yeah.
y'all.
Yeah, I don't think it's a thing.
So I was like, can you have more than one? And I think maybe you can, you I guess, could. Maybe if there's like a tie with GPA. Well, and this particular doctor, he said, you know, I don't really want to be quoted on this. He said, but I've always thought that he was nice at school, and I was valedictorian, but I do believe several of us may have tied for GPA. Yeah. And I said, so are you saying he also was valedictorian? And he said, well, I think we all may have had high GPAs. So yeah. I took it as, no, he wasn't valedictorian.
Well, who gave the speech?
Ben Brown wasn't. Right.
Who's in the little program that your parents look at and stuff? Whose name is there? I'll tell you who it ain't. Ben Brown.
Right. And so that's when I started to realize, well, you know, he has plastic surgery residency, Georgetown University. We know that's not necessarily true, but Georgetown University is in the name of the hospital where he did do his residency. And he did go to UT Southwestern, but he was a valedictorian, but he did have a high GPA. So it's like, yeah. you know, if this is how he's running his professional image mm-hmm. with basically mistruths, mm-hmm. misleading information.
Half-truths,
mm-hmm. yeah. So it's a way to say, oh, well, I really didn't mean for it to come mm-hmm. across that yeah. way. That's kind of the way it came across to me. Like, okay, I'm just going to just sprinkle a little bit, just mm-hmm. twist it just
well,
enough
that's what works.
Where it might be believable.
Right.
So, you know, when I see this information where it's misleading, he's mm-hmm. presenting himself as one way, it is also consistent with what I've heard from a lot of the patients that I spoke with. Those that are supportive of him and say he did a great job, as well as those that are no longer supportive of him because they feel like he cost them permanent, he cost them almost their life and did mm-hmm. some permanent damage. But basically very charismatic. Every single one of them described him as having these great first impressions mm-hmm. that they walked in and he's handsome, he's charming,
yes.
you know, good personality, that Hillary also pretty and sweet and nice mm-hmm. and friendly and interested in their lives, a good conversationalist. But impressions on both of those changed with some of these patients.
Okay.
When problems started to come up, those who didn't have any problems, mm-hmm. everything was great. They right. remained great. You know, their relationship is easygoing, if you will. There weren't any rough patches. But when there were problems occurring, that's when the charm sort of started to fade. They were more difficult to get a hold of. There was more pushback on their complaints. Well, it's not us, it's you.
Right.
And then the more you find out that how he actually ran his office, and this is what is just so shocking to me. Again, we'll talk a little bit more about Deborah Brown, or Deborah Brown Guy is her name, no relation to Ben Brown, but she only worked for him for a couple of months in September of 2022, and they fired her because she was complaining. I saw a copy of the letter that she sent them saying, you are not running a safe environment for your clients. You don't have proper sterile processing procedures for your equipment. The way you're doing procedures on patients that are basically putting them in danger because they shouldn't be done mm-hmm. in your clinic. They should be done in a hospital. Mm-hmm. And he performed a facelift on a woman. And they said that they were having to provide a certain cocktail of medications that they specifically put together. And they didn't have anybody, and this is coming from two different former employees that I spoke with, who basically said that he didn't always like watch to see how they were reacting to the medications when he was trying to put them under. And it wasn't being put fully under. It was more like a twilight mm-hmm. experience. But Deborah Brown Guy described a situation where a woman came in for a facelift, got so sick off the medication she couldn't stop puking. Mm. And so she had to leave the appointment and then come back. And Deborah said, she spoke with her and she said, are you sure you want to do this? You know, this isn't a normal reaction. And she said, well, this is work I've really been wanting to get done for a while. You know, he's given me an affordable rate. I've paid. I want to get this done. So she makes the appointment. She comes back. She wakes up in the middle of her facelift procedure and asks to go to the bathroom. And Deborah Guy's like, this is completely unsafe. It's unsanitary. No, she shouldn't even be waking up. We probably shouldn't even be doing this here.
Yeah.
You know, and anyway, so she said that the doctor did allow her to go to the bathroom and that she came back and started to puke again and literally puked all over the room where there's vomit dripping from equipment. Ugh. There's vomit on the floors because she was reacting to the medications that they had given her. And so, you know, again, this is just from Deborah's point of view. I've spoken to another former employee as well. But they had all kinds of documentation. I mean, I can prove that they were employees. They had pictures. They had complaints. Deborah filed a complaint with the state of Florida. She also let Ben Brown and Hillary Brown know the way you're running your office is not safe for patients. And they basically pushed back on her and said she was the problem. Yeah. And that was what I heard from a lot of other patients as well as employees, is that there was this big turnover mm-hmm. of staff. Jane Hawkins talked about it. Several of the other patients that I interviewed also said that every time they went back, there was like a new face there. There was somebody, and they weren't all necessarily properly trained. Mm-hmm. You don't want somebody who knows what they're doing if you're running things haphazardly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so another interview I did that I thought was an important one was Shannon Garange, and she was his former office manager for about 4.5 years. I think Shannon felt very loyal to Ben Brown is what I took away, that initially she was very devoted to him. She appreciated the job. She was excited to work there. She admired him. She thought that the work that he was doing was great. He performed a mini mommy makeover on her. He actually performed a surgery on her son who needed some work, mm-hmm. and she was pleased with the outcome of both. But she said, and that was when he was married to his first wife, but she said as their working relationship continued, she felt like personally he began to deteriorate, that he was seeing more and more legal issues, that he was having more and more personal issues, and it seemed to be distracting him away from the patients. And then you have 2020, you have COVID come around. Mm-hmm. What's elective? Plastic surgery is elective. So that's a big chunk out of his paycheck.
Yeah.
And this is just my opinion as far as the money goes. But like, I think that she said that at that point, she really started to see a lot of decisions being made that were sloppy. He was sloppy with patients. It was not so much concern. And those were her words, you know, about them, as it was about making money and cutting corners to cut costs. And she gave many examples. But one of the examples she gave was that there are red biohazard plastic red bags, basically, that are for medical waste that's hazardous, you know, yeah. biohazard, you know, body parts, blood, that kind of
teeth
thing.
Teeth.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, but it's expensive and they charge by the weight. So Ben Brown had his staff, according to Shannon, the former office manager, not to use those because he didn't want to pay. So he was having them throw regular biohazard away in the regular trash.
Ooh.
Because they didn't want to use these red bags because it was too expensive. And one evening, she said she left work at the office in downtown Pensacola. And as she's walking through the driveway in the back parking lot, she sees an IV bag. She basically sees trash from the work of the day, including a labia, and that is a vagina part for those who aren't familiar. But yeah, so it's basically a piece of the inner lip of the vagina that was on the ground.
Oh.
She said that they had performed what's called a labioplasty earlier that day, and that appeared to be basically the garbage from that procedure on the sidewalk. And she said she was horrified.
Unbelievable.
And she's like, kids play around here. Yeah. This is not just a commercial mm-hmm. district. There's homes around here. And she goes, I just couldn't believe it. She goes, but any complaints that you would take, he would just dismiss and say, you know, pipe down. So mm-hmm. you were rewarded for going with the flow. Mm-hmm. You were ostracized and criticized and insulted, according to her, if you pushed back mm-hmm. at all.
Right.
So she said that it got to the point where she and his physician assistant were basically a wound care facility, that so many mm. people were coming in, and she was appalled. But she said he also was very moody, that he would come in some days and they were the best employees in the world, and in other days he would come in and insult them and call them idiots and losers and this and the other. And she said it was just a real emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me a lot of the case that we talked about with Charles Stamatolis, the dentist who lost his license after decades worth of complaints from patients as well as employees that he had sexually abused them or was inappropriate. But he was also a wealthy man, and if you look at his clerk of court records, there are any number of complaints. He also owned a lot of property. He was a landlord. Whether it was a patient, whether it was an employee, whether it was somebody who rented from him, to a T, there were all these complaints that basically said he lorded it over them. Mm-hmm. They didn't have money. He'd already mm-hmm. promised them, here, I'll cut you, you know, I'll get you your deposit back on your apartment, but then he doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or he hires somebody to do work for him who doesn't have a lot of money to begin with, and then he doesn't pay them because they can't really, or only pays them partially back because they don't really have the means to pursue it.
Right.
And it was the same with the patients who, you know, claimed that he had sexually abused them as well. Some of them were relying on him for discounted or free dental work in exchange for, say, cleaning an office or doing work around his office, and then he would gyp them. So he took advantage of that power. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's kind of what it reminded me when I'm listening to Shannon and listening to another former employee and listening to these patients, especially ones that had talked to him for a while and started out liking him. There was this feeling of, is it me? Am I wrong? He was just so charming. He was so great. And that way of saying, well, is it your body? You're one of the less than 10%. It all came across as very manipulative to me. I'm the doctor. I'm the one with the degree. I'm the man. I'm the one in charge. Right. You need to listen to me. And then you have women that are coming to him already because they want work done on their bodies. Maybe health reasons they need it. Maybe it is because of breast cancer and they need a reconstruction. Or maybe it's because they just want to feel a little bit better about themselves because you get older and your body changes and maybe they just wanted a little confidence boost. Whatever the reason, it doesn't matter. But I feel like he and maybe their perception of what people would think of them for even getting these procedures done. Yeah. He took advantage of that to layer on the shame. And that's just my opinion.
Right.
Listening to them talk.
Right. Well, he took them through that, what I talked about. Deny, attack, reverse. I'm the victim now, and you're the offender. How dare you come to me? And none of these things happen just in the office, just at home, just on the racquetball court, just at the ballpark. This is this person's dynamic and personality. And anybody, I get so upset when people have authority and they misuse it on other people. That is when you can tell if someone's a good person. If they have authority and they don't misuse it, we've worshiped doctors for so long, and I don't know why we do it. We let people that have money do crazy stuff, you know, and then we just go, oh, they're just eccentric. This behavior is not acceptable. And women are finally pushing back. Our people are finally pushing back. And when you realize this is what's happening, that that person's trying to turn you into the problem, then you get empowered. And you're like, you're not doing that to me.
Exactly. And I think that's what is happening now that the truth is coming out. And it is so sad and so tragic that it took the death of his wife for these women to finally be heard.
Right.
And these men too. I've had men reach out to me, and I want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. He has done work on men who have also shared with me that they are still dealing with the repercussions of the work that he did. Mm-hmm. And it was shoddy. And just so you know, with Jane Hawkins ended up having to get a nurse friend of hers from out of town 2 months after her surgery because she was in bed with a gaping wound in her stomach that would not heal. Her husband, a U.S. Army veteran, was helping her clean it and pack it, told her he could see the muscle wall.
Ugh.
Of her stomach.
Yeah,
and that's how bad that it was because, and they're telling her, this is normal, it's going to be fine, you just need to follow the wound care instructions. And again, she's just like laying in bed, wondering if she's even going to make it. And her son, Charlie, was only 17 at the time, just turned 18 recently. And he's looking at her thinking, my mom's going to die. What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to her? What is about to happen to our life? What is going on? And he told me, he's like, I didn't want her to have the procedure to begin with because that's my mom and I think she's perfect, you know?
Oh, how sweet.
I know, but you know, she really only did it as an add-on because she did need it, according to the medical recommendation of her doctor, to have those older implants removed. So she never dreamed in a million years that it was going to end up like this. And so because she felt like she wasn't getting satisfaction from Ben Brown, and she said that he did tell her, this is 100% my fault. I'll do all these revision surgeries for free, whatever I can do to make it up. And to me, that just came across as him being fearful and concerned because he realized.
Well, he wouldn't do another one on me after he did all
that. How bad that was.
I'll tell you what, he would,
Well, that's how she felt. She was like, I don't want to trust you anymore. So she called a nurse friend. She goes, and she starts, you know, describing what's going on. The nurse drops everything, comes to see her. And the first thing she says when she takes one look at this wound on her stomach, this open, gaping wound that is 9 inches by 4 inches, we're going to the emergency room. So because she's associated with the military, she's in Okaloosa County, she goes to Eglin Air Force Base. And she sees the plastic surgeon there, and he took one look at it. She did. This is actually a female doctor, and she took one look at it, and she tells Jane, she said, the only way I'm going to be allowed to work on this is to close the wound first. I can't basically file it under a plastic surgery. This isn't, you know, plastic surgery. This is wound care.
Hot mess.
I have to close this wound. And she goes, it's going to take 2 to 3 months. And she later told her, I thought you were going to go septic. She goes, it looked like you had a ribeye laying on your stomach.
Oh my gosh.
And so, and you know, that's horrifying. I mean, and she's still living with, I mean, even though it's healed now, it's not the same. She has loss of feeling. There's another young woman that I interviewed, Brandy Fitzsimmons, just beautiful, wanted a, you know, just a sweet lady inside and out. And really she and her husband were planning this big vacation and she wanted to, you know, they'd saved for it. And she wanted to have a little bit of work done, including a tummy tuck and some liposuction. And she said barely not one of the procedures went right. And she also had the suture. She said the liposuction on her arms looked uneven. The suture opened up on her stomach, not to the extent that it did on Jane Hawkins, but it left a tunnel for several months, basically. Mm. So what should have been just, you know, again, a short amount of time to heal, took a year and a half. They ended up having to push back this vacation. They had to actually tailor it down because her husband had to take off work to help care for her. Mm-hmm. She was so debilitated in her healing process, she could hardly even use the bathroom by herself. And that is to a T what every single one of these women told me. So, you know, this is damage that they have to live with their bodies for the rest of their life.
Oh, yeah.
They have to look at it. They have to see it. Not to mention just the horror of experiencing and watching your body fall mm-hmm. apart, your flesh rot off your body, you know? Yeah. And then not to get, to feel like you're not getting heard, to feel like the staff is not necessarily, and I won't say all the staff, I think they just felt like, again, so many different faces. There were some that were helpful, some that were not, some that moved on. Mm-hmm. But all in all, he was the one with the medical license. Mm-hmm. He was the one who was responsible for their care, and they felt like that they couldn't trust him anymore.
Right.
But compare that to, and just, you know, for the sake of fairness so people understand, I did talk to several other patients who did sing his praises. Mm-hmm. They did not experience these bad outcomes. They did not have problems with follow-up and wound care. And they still felt like he was charming and that he had done a great job on them and that they were better for it. And they'd had him perform. One woman I spoke with was one of his first patients when he went out on his own and been seeing him for years. But I thought it was interesting in talking to her and that she felt like, you know, she was not in a position to have spoken like I had to directly to these women who had these mm-hmm. terrible, horrible experiences. But her first initial reaction was, my experience with him was great. He made me feel special. He was nice. We were almost friends. I loved Hillary. These other women, I just don't understand. You know, nobody's mm-hmm. perfect. Surgery doesn't always mm-hmm. go right. And I don't mean that critically, mm-hmm. but I did tell her, I said, you know, you didn't experience what these other women experienced. Yeah. And I think in this world, especially of social media, we have this tendency to assume that we know, mm-hmm. but you don't look down at your breast and see it turn mm-hmm. black and watch it fall out. I talked to another woman who said that it literally, the implant, it fell out because the skin rotted.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, you just, it's a nightmare. And so anyhow, I feel like that a lot of these women were afraid to come forward, and even the men that I spoke to, because of what they fear will be the reaction mm-hmm. from others. Like,
well,
you
that's
set yourself
not fair.
Up for it.
Yeah, that's not fair. I mean, we could do that with anything. It happens with grief all the time. People are like, hurry up and get over that, you know? And it's because they don't have any empathy. Or everything's good until it ain't, right?
Right.
So there's a point where things are. I imagine he was at his best when he first got out of college and young and didn't have distractions and hadn't taken on some of that weird stuff he took on thinking about and doing. It doesn't always have to be drugs and alcohol that impair people. Sometimes it's decisions. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's emotions. Sometimes it's that narcissism. It's other things that are psychological. This has been all over the place. This is nobody's fault but Ben Brown's fault. And he thinks he's the charmer, and everybody's charming when they're young and handsome and beautiful and young. Who cares? I do not care how charming you are. And what would have been better is for him to get someone, and he couldn't do this, according to people I've talked to. He could never take in somebody else's feedback or input. Mm-hmm. And if they said, may I show you something in a polite way? Oh, I got this. You know, I got this.
I talked to other medical professionals who worked with him and said the same thing. They described someone who felt like he was the smartest and best in the room.
Well, and these people that say, well, mine was fine. You have eyes to see. Do you see this lady over here with a tunnel in her belly? Do you see this lady over here? That's the same doctor that did fine as red wine with you. I'm just so tired of people doing that. Quit. just you go out there and be his lawyer, do whatever you want to, put signs on the side of the road, but do not discount these other people. I get so mad about this bull stuff, you know, every time I get mad about it.
Yeah, well, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, you and I have talked. This is certainly a talker story, you know, not just here locally because it originated here and a lot of people know this cast of characters, mm-hmm. if you will. They're familiar with him personally, but also nationally, internationally, there's just been a lot of people have reached out just wanting to know more information. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of interest in this for a lot of reasons. I think it's, it has to do with plastic surgery. It has to do with the fact that this beautiful young woman passed and didn't need to die. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of salacious details that I think have people fascinated by it. But to your point about people defending him, before this second article came out, I was covering a meeting. I cover government meetings, and I was covering a local government meeting, and a person who is a local leader approached me about the story. And it wasn't a surprise to me, because a lot of people had been approaching mm-hmm. me about the story. It was what we call a talker. I mean, mm-hmm. people were talking about it. And said, so you're covering the Ben Brown case. And I said, yes. And said, oh, was it really after hours? And I was like, that's what you took away from it?
Yeah.
I
so
was
out
like,
of
huh.
all that, wow, I'm glad you're a leader.
Well, and I thought, interesting. And then another person who is married to a very successful local leader reached out to me privately as well on Facebook and was like, Ben Brown, wow, what a crazy case. And, you know, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. Usually that's like fishing for it. Information yeah. and yeah. clearly, you know,
like, let me get ready for what you're going to say.
He was implying that he yeah. knew him and that basically Ben was this nice guy and it'd be interesting to see how it's coming out. And I went on Facebook and I realized I looked at that. I actually have a number of mutual friends with mm-hmm. Ben Brown before he had his PR firm take it all down. But I do have some screenshots and those two individuals were Facebook friends. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with yeah. that. I mean, mm-hmm. the guy certainly had friends and he had mm-hmm. a wide social circle. But it goes to show that when people come up to you and want to talk about something, you really never know what their motivations mm-hmm. are. And I would love for them to kind of, you know, you want to talk about this latest article? You yeah. want to talk about yeah. the basically war
wounds? How about
wounds?
This picture right here? Yeah. It doesn't matter if it was after hours. Like I said, after hours are during hours. Doing that during hours scares me even more.
Right. Well, the bottom line is nobody else was in there but these two other mm-hmm. employees. So
right.
where was the oversight?
Right.
Where was the, you know, it was just this impression of basically the office was closed. He was doing this and nobody was really around to watch except
right.
these two employees and their training is questionable.
Yeah. And
so
they were young.
Their
too.
Medical training,
yeah.
right.
Well, she had a cardiac arrest and, you know, most doctors know advanced CPR, even as a pharmacist. When something starts happening in our store, we all intuitively and by our plan know what to do. We have people pass out all the time. We have people have seizures. We give shots, people not necessarily having a reaction to the vaccine or something, they get scared, they're emotional, or people are hungry, or they're dehydrated, or nauseated. We have to take care of them. We don't say, you know, it's your problem, it's your fault.
Well, but I feel like, especially when the social circles of people who perceive that they are important mm-hmm. or that they have money, mm-hmm. and especially in a community like Northwest Florida, where there is a huge gap between the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. I like to describe Pensacola as a big, small town. So sometimes when people get a little bit of success, a little bit of money, a little bit of what they perceive as power and authority, well, by golly, we're a little bit better than everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
We're just going to
yeah.
hang out together and mm-hmm. be cool and rich together.
Right.
And that
mm-hmm.
was the vibe I was getting.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, what do y'all, what's your relationship
yeah.
with Ben Brown? You got to bug little old me about mm-hmm. all this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're fishing for information. First guy was basically implying, like, here, the woman, his wife died.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about whether or not it happened after hours,
yeah.
like, that to me is in my experience as a reporter, when people do things like that, it's a passive-aggressive way of defending mm-hmm. the other person.
Right. And it's just, it's a flag, too, about how, I guess, empathetic or kind or whatever they are, if you're really going to say that, like you said, after a young woman dies at the hands of the surgeon
of
who happens to be her husband, and for nothing, during
right.
hours, after hours, whatever, no hours, that's what you want to talk about. You couldn't read all this other stuff or listen to all this other stuff and take anything else away but that.
Right, exactly. And then you have the guy that's sliding into my DMs trying to talk about Brown and basically implying that, you know, he was a nice guy and this and the other. I'm like, well, maybe he is.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
maybe he bought Girl
maybe
Scouts cookie
is.
Every
yeah.
year. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I know his wife's dead.
Right. Well, I mean, people are going to do that. We expect people to do that. There's always going to be somebody that wants to take the devil's advocate or this, that, and the other. I don't care what those people say. I care what people that said, my name is Jane Hawkins, and here's what happened
and,
to me.
And it was wrong, and he needs to be held accountable.
And here's the pictures.
And these people that want to whitewash it and take it off into a different direction, it is often the people who they know. And it's like, okay, so because you know this person, because you perceive them as an equal, or they've somehow benefited you, whatever circles you run in, maybe he's done work for them for all we know, maybe. Or work for the woman that of this particular husband, for all I know. I don't know any of this, but I perceive that there are other reasons and other agendas why people will defend someone, especially when they know them.
Well, and I would look at all this stuff, and the fact that I knew him, I would not let him work on my significant other, my children, my family, anybody. Because, like I said, it's all good till it ain't. There's a point where things go wrong. Nobody's saying he wasn't a good doctor once upon a time. But I'm just going to go ahead and say, even the fact of him not answering people's questions, let's just take everything else out of the way. Not staffing his office properly. Not following procedures. Not even sterile procedures.
No crash cart in the room. Right. That was part of the problem. There was no oxygen to give her. Right. All they could do is perform CPR. Mm-hmm. And from what I'm hearing, it was primarily the two young women that were in the room with him that were performing CPR. Mm-hmm. But again, this is under investigation. Mm-hmm. Those details hopefully will come out when the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office is done investigating. But these are among the things that they're going to be looking at.
Right.
What are the protocols that should have been followed? Were they followed? Why and why not? Mm-hmm. You know, was there a deliberate intent? Was it accidental? Whatever the case may be, these are the questions that certainly her father has plenty of questions. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me how appalled he was when he walked through that office area. So according to friends and family, part of the reason that whole area was still sort of in shambles and not the surgical suite that it was intended and designed to be is because money he had paid to the contractor took off with that money and didn't properly build out the office.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things that I've heard from friends and family.
Still got to get it done.
Right. And you don't open up anyway.
Yeah. You know, just get it done.
Bucket of water. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just shocking to me.
I don't know. It just never, that place over there on Nantahala Road has never struck me as being exceptional or somewhere that would even do plastic surgery.
Right. And I think it's interesting, too, that he hired a PR company to respond for him. Like, just so you know, as the audience and listeners, you know, as a journalist, it's important to be fair. It's important to be balanced. It's important to get both sides because you don't know all the facts. You don't have all the information until you do your best to, you know, get the truth. There's three sides to every story, as they say. Yours, mine, and the truth.
That's
what's important. And so I reached out to him numerous times. I've emailed, I've reached out, and for this story, for the other one that I did, and both times this company Red Banyan replied. And normally in journalism, you don't let somebody just make a statement and just read it out because the idea being that, you know, anybody could do that. Anybody can avoid accountability by hiding behind an emailed statement. Mm-hmm. The idea is to make yourself available for quid pro quo, to go back and forth with questions. You know, here's my question. Okay, well, here's my follow-up question. If you just get to make a blanket statement, I'm really great. I do nothing wrong. I super duper loved my wife. I super duper didn't mean to hurt anybody. But he never did say that. It was more like, I've not done any wrongdoing. Yeah. These were minor procedures on my wife, blah, 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 blah. So in that regard, he did say through his PR firm that he is a good doctor and he's, you know, stands behind his work and he's not guilty of any wrongdoing. Okay. We'll find out what the sheriff's office has to say as well as the medical examiner. And they may agree with all that. We don't know.
I don't think
But I will say this, talking to more than a dozen patients and former employees, there is something there. And if no other reason, hello, Florida Department of Health, why didn't this come up sooner? Why was there no red flags? Why did nobody take a second or a third or a hard look at this? There were so many complaints that were made. And there were also people who had terrible things happen to them, they said, who didn't file complaints. Some of these cancer survivors were like, I was just happy to be alive. I was happy I beat the disease, even though Joy Edwards was one. She went through hell. She ended up with such bad infection in her breast because it was left untreated for so long. She couldn't walk. She couldn't drive. She couldn't lift up her arms anymore. She's begging the doctor for help. He's telling her it's normal. She ends up finally going into the hospital. One of his staff and another doctor that he had on his staff who actually has since quit. I think that's a whole other story, but we'll get into that another time. This doctor and this physician assistant were at the hospital using a type of equipment that blasts out pus. There was so much pus, they had to blast it out with this specialized medical tool. Then they tested the infection that was in there, and there were four different hospital-based organisms.
These were
infections that came from the hospital, from the original surgery that he did on her. So, you know, here's Joy Edwards, and she's like, Molly, he needs to be stopped. She's another one that said he needs to lose his license. I'm so happy that they're investigating him. I think this is what happened was criminal. Mm-hmm. She goes, and I didn't file a complaint. I asked her specifically, did you file a complaint? I asked it of all the patients that I talked to. And she said, I did not file a complaint. She goes, I was just happy to be alive. She goes, I'd survived cancer. At some point, I thought I was going to die. I went through all this pain, all this trauma. She goes, once they got that infection cleared up, she was able to go to rehab. She was basically able to get her health back, although she's still taking medication for nerve pain to this day. Every single one of them still has some little something, and maybe not even little, but there's something that is a reminder of what they went through. But she basically was like, I didn't want to file a complaint because I didn't want any more negativity I just wanted to concentrate on what made me happy and what kept me in a good mood. I was just happy to be alive.
And you get weary. And you get weary of having
to
do that.
And does the state of Florida rely on that? Is that why the process to file a complaint is so hard?
I think it may be something about, like what you said before, that it's elective and that kind of thing. And I know they got complaints. And I know that some of his contemporaries or peers tried to approach him and talk to him. And he just wouldn't have it. He couldn't even let him talk to him about like a procedure that if somebody in pharmacy has something that I need to know, I'm so happy. I want you to tell me. The more we look at this case and talk about this, I'm glad I work at a little bitty pharmacy, but it's not so little. We got three of them. Family pharmacy where we care. We overstaff. We've got six pharmacists and about 15 techs and ancillary people running around because it's important to us to give you good care. It's important for you to be able to ask us anything. We even have two consultation booths. It just is different when you practice professionally. It's very different. I can't imagine being one of the paraprofessionals or ancillary professional with him because He didn't even watch out for himself. So you know he wasn't watching out for them and their licenses.
Yes, exactly. And that's something else I think that needs to be looked at. And I plan to take a closer look into some of that too. But another story that I wanted to share that Shannon Grinch had also shared with me when she was working for him, she was not at this point the office manager, but he was in his downtown office performing some procedures on an older woman, an elderly lady, she said. And he was in there with his nurse practitioner when suddenly the nurse practitioner came running out of the room looking for the oxygen tank. Well, it was a two-story office. The oxygen tank wasn't close by. So they ran upstairs to get the oxygen tank. They're basically saying this lady's, they're losing her. She was going under. And so they work hard. They get to basically help her live. They get the oxygen to her. But she said that he told everybody not to call 911, that he didn't want it to get out, that he was like, wait, let's see if we can handle this. And then finally somebody ended up did calling 911. But in the meantime, what he had done while she was in this state is he had sutured her tongue, the woman's tongue, to the side of her cheek.
Oh, no.
And when I asked Shannon, I said, well, is that a thing? Like, do people do that if you're about to have a seizure? I mean, I understand that, like, if you're an epileptic, they'll put something in your mouth to keep you from swallowing your tongue if you're a seizure. Okay. Yeah. I guess I'm just thinking of Little House on the Prairie.
Well, that's how it used to be, but not anymore.
Okay. Well, see, it just goes to show that there's so much I don't know. Yeah. But at any rate, so that's what I was asking her. Well, why would you suture a cheek, a tongue to a cheek? And she said, well, I don't know. That was just, I said, was that just his thing? And she goes, seemed like that was just his thing. And I said, but would it take very long? She goes, well, probably not, just probably a minute. But according to him, that was just his way of trying to keep her from swallowing her tongue. So in talking to Hillary Brown's dad, and we were discussing that story, you know, we both wondered about the same thing with Hillary. And he said that he did ask Ben if he had sutured her tongue to her cheek as well, and that basically all he would say is that he cleared the airway.
Okay. See, well, that's a crazy answer, isn't it? The answer was yes or no, so we know our answer. And just by the way, your intuition was correct. You don't want people tongue going back in their throat and this, that, and the other, but there's some things that we can't do that, like a seizure or something where people are, you know, thrashing about. But like with that on surgery, how about just start CPR?
Well, and that was the dad, Marty Ellington. That's exactly what he said. He goes, my God, if I find out that he did suture her tongue to her cheek. He goes, that's a, whether it was 30 seconds, a minute, or 5 minutes, that's time he could have been spending on CPR, saving my daughter's life because he didn't have the proper crash cart. And whether or not Hillary, you know, by all accounts, Hillary wanted to have these procedures done. She'd had a number of them done and she wanted more, that she was okay for him performing these procedures on her. But I damn sure think she was not okay with dying.
Oh, no.
I don't think that's what she wanted.
That was not part of her elective surgery. Right. That was not, you know, and the thing is, like, I still can't, did he do CPR?
So I don't know, and that's all under investigation. But according to her family, who have spoken to people who claim to have direct knowledge of the situation, he did not perform CPR. But that is with a an asterisk on it. I don't know that that's true or not true. I just know that I've talked to people who were in a position to know, and they told me that he did not perform CPR.
That would scare me to death to be in an office.
That he was trying to basically address the situation.
Right. Advanced CPR. Every physician should know that, and every pharmacist and every nurse. We have to be there if something's going to go like that and not ask around or suture this or allegedly suture or whatever it is. You just drop to your knees and do CPR. You tell someone, call 911. You don't say, don't call 911.
Right.
You're like, let's get some help in here, because CPR done correctly is vigorous and exhausting.
Yes, and that's essentially what they were saying, is there's also a question of how long was it before 911 was actually called. So that's another question that hopefully will get answered.
Well, she didn't have enough oxygen to her brain, so, you know.
We know it was
that.
A while. Yeah, it could have been anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes, apparently.
We know that she didn't have oxygen to her brain.
Yes, yeah, for an extended period of time. So there are a lot of unanswered questions, and I guess certainly Ben Brown knows what happened that night, that afternoon, and whoever else was in the office. But again, this is just an opportunity for us to sort of bring more details to light. There's a lot more to this case that we're going to continue to follow. And one thing that I do want to mention, too, you know, talking about his reviews and how people are relying so much online to find out information about somebody, as well as word of mouth. So if one or two people have a good experience, like did with Ben Brown, Jane Hawkins said he came highly recommended. Other people, Joy Edwards said he came highly recommended. Every single person I talked to, he'd been recommended by somebody else who had a good experience. So this is a man who is capable of doing quality work, at least enough where people recommended him. But when it wasn't quality work, he should have been held accountable so it didn't continue. There shouldn't be this this trail of alleged carnage.
Right. Or like a maimed, manhandled, you know, just and, massacred.
And here's the point that I was going to make is these reviews. You know, that was something else that I thought was interesting. His former staff said basically he would pay to have every bad review removed and he would provide incentives for people to write positive reviews. So I think it was interesting that you looked up his reviews today, and for the first time in a long time, we're starting to see some negative ones.
Yeah, I saw scarred for life, zero follow-up. One person put one and done. And one said, I'm worse, not better. Untrained, unlicensed, big turnover. I would like to give 0 stars. Sloppy, no dressings, no cleanup. I remove my own stitches. And then we got Dr. Brown is the best. World-class surgeon with a huge heart. Very, very good work. One person had written there, which this shows like that there are some guys there. I think her grandson had gynecomastia, which is a little bit of swelling in the breast from either the way someone's built, a man's built or boy's built. Could be from drugs, too. That's the side effect with some drugs, too. But he did good on this young boy of fixing the gynecomastia. So there's all that going on. But, you know, it's just like anything else. Like when you vote for whatever type of thing, people like on Dancing with the Stars are like, you can vote 9,000,000 times and it costs 10 cents, you know?
Right.
So there's all that that goes on.
Yeah, exactly. But it just goes to show that even people who do their due diligence, if you were to rely on those reviews before, apparently, if it's true that he was paying to have the bad ones removed, how can you rely? How can you know that what you're reading is true, really?
It's just so sad. You trust your physician. You just trust them so just wholly.
Right. I'm not a mechanic. They could tell me anything about my car.
Thing.
Same with my body.
I just paid $900 for my car brakes today. Not just the brakes, but all the other stuff I needed. I don't know, but I trust the people I go to. I go to Vinoise Tires, and they always take care of my stuff. It has more than brakes to do. But I walked out there like, feeling good about it, not and it's just my car. If it was something wrong with my car, it's very different than it being your person and your body.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Pam, what are your takeaways from this latest update of Beauty Buyer Beware?
Yeah, my takeaway is anything in the world can happen. One of the main things, I never go to the doctor by myself, because when someone tells me news I don't want to hear as a patient, I stop listening, you know, and somebody else there with me to help. I think you should never be in the hospital by yourself either. I think you need to go there. And I think even looking up the doctor, like you said, looking them up. But I would go see somebody else's, the same kind of surgery I was having. And some people may, some people will show you that and say, I would like to see that. So, I mean, but it's even if they don't do any of that, they are trusting a person that said, if I can't help you, I'm certainly not going to harm you.
Absolutely. And my takeaways are that the state of Florida should have been that person also saying, okay, I know we've licensed him, but you know, if people weren't properly trained, if he was performing procedures in his office that should not have been performed mm-hmm. there and should have been performed perhaps in a hospital setting, whatever the case may be, where was the state of Florida in all this? Where were there even just a routine inspection, mm-hmm. much less potentially ignoring complaints? Mm-hmm. I know I feel ignored. Mm-hmm. I called repeatedly. Mm-hmm. I emailed repeatedly to the point where it was almost funny. I set my calendar by it. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to get up this morning because this particular article I worked on for a full week, in and day mm-hmm. out. Like early in the morning, I got up till I went to bed late at night talking to people. Lots of information that I've not even used yet, but that'll be coming out as well. And so during that whole week and weeks beyond, I called, emailed regularly, not one response.
Still.
And this is for a person who gets paid to find out information. Yeah. If you're a regular person trying to, you know, I also have a family. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a regular person holding down a regular job that doesn't give you time to call mm-hmm. state affiliate, you know, agencies and dig up information, how are you going to get to who you need to speak mm-hmm. with? And that's why I was so fascinated by just how the process is so difficult. So that's my takeaway, as I intend to ask the state of Florida, Florida Department of Health, and whoever's in charge of overseeing these plastic surgeons and these complaints, like, what do we got to do to get
right,
heard,
right.
you know?
Exactly. And, you know, sadly enough, and I do want to say this, rest in peace to Hillary. Condolences to her family.
Absolutely.
And, you know, why did we have to get to this?
Yes, I know. It shouldn't have come to this. Again, going back to plenty of people had sounded the alarm. Why did no one respond?
It's just so sad. It should have never happened. It should have never happened to Hillary. It should have never happened to all these patients.
Absolutely. And for those who are wondering, again, the investigation is still ongoing. The Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office and the Medical Examiner's Office are looking into her death because of the unusual circumstances. And as soon as they give a conclusion to that, we'll have, of course, the results and an update on this case. But I think that's it for Beauty Buyer Beware 2.
This is a good article. People read it. It's called That Man Has to Be Stopped by Molly Barrows.
Yes. Thank you. Check it out online. And I appreciate you, Pam. Thanks so much for coming in talking about this. And we're going to continue to follow it. We'll bring you updates just as soon as we get it. And we appreciate you joining us on Gulf Coast Confidential. I'm your host, writer, and producer, Molly Barrows, with co-host and researcher, Pam Hill. And a big thanks, as always, to director, editor, and production engineer, James Roy. And just remember, you can listen to more of our Gulf Coast Confidential conversations wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And you can also watch right here on the Gulf Coast Confidential YouTube channel. Just don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.